We are live. All right. Oh, we're actually not live. We're just recording. So, hi, everyone. We're going to have a little fun. Okay. Hi, everyone. This is Jason Sansusi with the Do You Know Jones podcast. And I'm just really excited. Geo Week is one of the best conferences of the year. It's just an amalgamation of just so many smart, geeky people that just love geospatial tech, and they love the application of that technology to a broad spectrum of the world's problems. I am really happy to have my next guest on. I have Mohammed Mustafa. He is the lead technical authority. Okay, so that's just fun to say, right? The lead technical authority of Trimble Aplonics. He is from Canada, so that's okay. Expect a few boots, maybe a Suri. I don't know. We'll see. But we're gonna dive into this interview. I have a couple questions, but there's a few things that are kind of burning, right? I want to talk about, so I do a lot of work with my nonprofit, with Drone Deploy, with Trimble. I want to talk to you, like, just a little bit more from your perspective. Tell me about how Trimble is empowering the UAS industry through this new cloud-based positional processing that's now, like I said, just announced through Drone Deploy, but obviously that's a big deal. Because getting precision data and making it easy for the hundreds of thousands of drone users that are trying to use it for surveying and mapping purposes is a big deal. So how is Trimble empowering that?
Well, thanks for the question, Jason. This is a bang-on question and straight to the point. Initially, the drone industry started from a very interesting point where, for some reason, the entire industry has been informed in a very kind of comprehensive way that the only way to do mapping is to use the traditional techniques from the 80s, which include surveying numerous ground control points per one small, tiny, little area, and to a point where some people in certain conferences question that in a kind of a negative language. I heard it
you
myself.
You can use the language, it's okay.
I heard it back in 2013 in a conference where people asked the question, why the hell surveying all these ground control points and then fly a drone above it? Why don't you just go ahead and survey the land and go home and instead of flying a drone? And that raised the flag amongst the entire community. What is it that we're not doing right? What should we do to improve that? Well, there's been significant amount of venture capitalist fund that came into the drone industry in the last 10, 15 years. And some of these organizations, startups, failed and some succeeded. And those who failed, they expunged hundreds of millions of dollars because they got on the wrong path, basically. And the user is the victim here, because the user, when people somehow blame the community of the drone user, I don't like that, because the user is similar to a user of any other technology out there, including Netflix, TV set, laptop computer. The vendor is responsible for providing the right tools and educating the user how to use the right tools. It's not to blame the user, it's actually to blame the vendor if they didn't do a good job. So what happened historically in the drone industry is that so many of those startups were aiming at excelling and growing and producing credible products, but they failed because they were shooting in the dark, and the ones that paid the price were the users because they ended up with the wrong tools. And that's really sad to tell as a story, because if I am a user today and I'm interested in investing in some new technology, I would love to have that technology served in a mature way with some tools that I could actually use, and I don't lose my investment fund. What would I appreciate from that vendor that I will shake hands with and trust and respect and work with? Unfortunately, that didn't happen in the drone industry, as everybody knows. But then the good point is that there's still hope, because drones are here to stay. They're not going anywhere. And the industry is evolving today, getting back on the right track. So we're not using the same technologies of the 80s anymore. We're not bombarding the ground with ground control points that are unnecessary. And I keep using that phrase since the 90s, that we landed people on the moon in the 60s without ground control points. So might as well fly the damn drones without ground control points. And by the way, I'm using French because he said I can.
You can.
Cool.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Please.
There you go. So that's Jason, ladies and gentlemen. Whoever is hearing us now, Jason is enabling me to using some language that I'm not allowed to use. Not at work, not even at home. So back to the subject. The question from Jason was, how Trimble was enabling drone deploy? Well, drone deploy, they came a long way. They started from the scratch like any other startup, and they found out very intelligently that the user community needs something along the lines of a TV set that they could operate using a TV remote control. They just flip the channels and they enjoy the show. Something along the lines of Netflix. You go in there, you sign up, you pay with your credit card, and you have your subscription. You could watch whatever you want, whenever you want. So Drone Deploy assessed the voice of customer very well, and then they latched on the right technologies, and they ended up progressively, over time, building the tool set or the toolbox that is offered to the user in a very simplistic way. So the user community ended up that actually started to subscribe to Drone Deploy ended up with an easy access to a good infrastructure, yet a lot of knowledge and professional quality that ended up in their mapping products. So that user, and instead of getting a university degree of how to operate the drone and how to process data out of it, they trusted Drone Deploy like everybody in our generation or in the future generations that trusted a service provider in the cellular industry or the TV industry and so on and so forth. And those who trusted Drone Deploy, they did really well because they're getting those maps today furnished to them through a cloud process. And what even makes it better is that Drone Deploy is working hard, has been working hard and improving their solutions. So when they found out that there is a way to improve the solution by jumping into using the GNSS on board the drones and processing the data in a better way and accepting the data and getting the data consumed properly in their processing pipeline, they approached one of the major players in the vendor field, which is Trimble. Trimble, built by Charlie Trimble back in the 70s, was the very first commercial professional grade company in the world of GPS. And Charlie Trimble is the founder in that company. He's still alive and kicking, and he's awesome. I just met him in a conference last year. We had some selfies, and it was awesome. And I told him that, you know what, you promised me 34 years ago when you were handing me an award that we're going to have another lunch. He basically invited a whole bunch of students for lunch upon receiving some awards. So he said, okay, guys, we should do this one more time. So here we are, 34 years later, we're doing it. He said, damn it, you should look into a comedy career. Engineering is not your thing. So anyway, Charlie Trimble, when he built Trimble organization, he built the best receivers in the world. And those have been evolving in the last little while. And Trimble actually diversified their technologies to cover many other market segments. But the GPS receiver technology has been their bread and butter for over close to 50 years, actually. And their mechanisms, algorithms of dealing with data has been the best in the world. And this is some public information that I'm not just claiming that that's what Trimble is about. They do have the best positioning and navigation tools in the world. So Drone Deploy approached Trimble and they ended up with two solutions. One is called PPK, which stands for Post-Processed Kinematic GPS. What that means is that you fly your drone. While you're flying it, you have a base station set up on the ground right in the mapping area. You run it at the same time the drone is flying, and you take the data from both GPS receivers, the one on the ground and the one on the drone, and you process it in a post-processed kinematic fashion called PPK. There are plenty of softwares out there. Trimble is one of the best, and you could process it. The trick is, do you have to go through 19,000 parameters to set on a desktop computer that happens to crash on your laptop while you're exposed to the sun or rain on site, or you could actually fire off the data to the cloud and everything done for you? And that's what Trimble was all about, helping and enabling the user of DonDeploy. The other option is another technology altogether called Trimble PPRTX. PP stands for post-processing, as we said, and RTX is the global network that Trimble established using thousands of GNSS receivers that are continuously operating, continuously acquiring data, and that data gets hosted in certain processing centers to take out all of the errors by leveraging all of that network of multi-thousand stations. And when they pull out the errors, they save them and upload them to the cloud and broadcast them through a telecommunication satellites or geostationary satellites, the ones that are actually the kind of, they call them LEO or low orbit satellites. And those telecommunication satellites, they're always in your line of sight at any point in time. So they're not like GPS satellites where they have their own orbit. They are actually always focused on the continent. So in North America, we have Inmarsat, for example. We download the data, the user gets the data downloaded to the receiver in real time without even knowing about it. So they don't have to click anything. It's just a subscription online that DroneDeploy made it available for the user. So the user goes in with their credit card, it's as if they're subscribing to Netflix or Amazon Prime, they're subscribing to DroneDeploy, and in the background, Trimble is enabling that. So PPRTX allows the user, what's in it for the user? Let's talk now business. Number one, no base station anymore, which means that the user doesn't have to buy a base station. They don't have to go through the ground logistics of using a base station, and they don't have to go through processing data using base station. So it's 100% done completely by Trimble in the background on the DroneDeploy cloud. So the user from now on, when they subscribe for that, they get themselves a drone. No matter what the drone is, this is a drone agnostic solution. You get the drone captures imagery, and it gets some GPS data from the onboard GPS receiver onboard that drone, and that data gets uploaded to the cloud, DroneDeploy cloud, and DroneDeploy cloud gets the RTX data from Trimble's cloud using the NMAR satellite in North America and other geostationary satellites over and around the world, and they process the data, and the data is available post-processed, which implies the highest accuracy. By post-processed, we mean that we run the algorithms forward in the data and then backward, and then we learn stuff about the data and then run it again back and forth until we get the best out of the data. We have the data back in the office or back in the cloud. We can do whatever we damn well please because we have access to the data. It's not a real time. And it makes sense that we have access to the data in post-processing, in post-mission mode, because images are not going to take a second to produce maps. They will take hours to produce maps. So might as well improve the trajectory. And that's all done on the cloud and DroneDeploy. So the user now is being served the best quality, the highest accuracy data in the world, but with the most convenience, because they don't have to go through ground logistics, they don't have to drop 20 grand to buy a base station, and in the meantime, they don't have to maintain that base station and get the pilot to be responsible for it, and so on and so forth. While we're talking about North America, United States, and Canada, on average, or way above average when it comes to safety. So you could leave your base station and go grab a coffee from Dunkin' Donuts or Tim Hortons up in Canada. That's nice and easy. But there are so many other parts of the world where going on site with a base station is actually not safe. And leaving a base station behind for a minute is not safe. And when you want to run your drone, you could run it from a skyscraper as opposed to running it from the ground. And that is actually the common practice that people do overseas. I have over 3,000 data sets that I have already in our repository because we're processing and we're learning about data. Some of the data sets I see very interesting stuff where people flew them from.
Sure.
you know, because they're worried about their own safety.
Yeah.
They just want to do the job, fly the drone, and then go home safely to their families. They don't want to get caught in some mumbo-jumbo stuff happening between tribes or between mobs, you know?
I know, yeah.
And this is actually one of the factors that we're proud of serving in that drone deployed Trimble solution, because it's a global solution. It's not actually constrained in North America. And it allows the user to be completely free of that base station business for life, yet accomplish the same exact quality mapping product with the same accuracy.
Now I feel real bad. I just bought a base station. So, I mean, that's amazing. And the thing that you mentioned related to, so I'm going completely off script. Never mind. Okay, so we're gonna geek out for a minute, but we're gonna do it in a real way. So, the thing that's very interesting, that's been fascinating about this industry since its inception, and all of the failures and in all the challenges, is that no one has really listened to the consumer. Like, no one's listened to the consumer. No one said, you know what, we need to make this so simple that it is just like watching Netflix. My grandmother can watch Netflix. She probably wouldn't want to understand even a little bit about what I do for a living. That bridge is so important, because that is what's going to not just make the industry eat simple. Not easy, but simple. But it's going to allow the next generation and the generation after that to access this industry in a real inclusive way. You just made it really simple. You made it like Drone Deploy and this partnership with Trimble, they just made it so simple that my grandmother could do it. That is not a story that is common in this industry at all, not even a little. It is overly complicated. It is trying to use the wrong tool for the job. It is all of these things, all of these different things that have happened. This is an amazing accomplishment. I am very proud to be working with both organizations that are at the nexus of just making this, of listening and just making it simple. So congratulations. Like, that's amazing. Like, that is next level, because most people think that drones cannot create precision information. They just can't do it. And they're right. Unless you can make it so simple that through these post-processing workflows that they don't have to touch. They don't have to parameterize. They don't have to do anything. They just have to hit go. They just have to turn it on and hit go. Swipe their credit card. And that's it. Wow. Bravo. That is impressive. So, okay, I have one more question. So on that particular note of preparing the sort of the next generation for this industry, what sort of insights or advice do you have as the lead technical authority at Trimble, as an executive that has a esteemed and distinguished career? What would you pass along as an insight to someone that's even interested in getting into this industry?
Well, we have three categories of our user community. The legacy category, which implies people who have been already in the geospatial field, and that category has history in using geospatial tools, and they're aware of the geospatial concepts. So we need to deal with that category in a separate way. There are two main categories in addition to the geospatial educated user. Two other categories. One is actually the business-oriented category, and the other is the technical-oriented category that wants to work with the actual gear. They want to fly the drone, run the operation on a cloud or on a laptop or a desktop, and produce some mapping products or some knowledge or some information to share with their society of users or clients, such as the public sector, the private sector, serving their clients with information that they extracted from the drones. That's the technical category. The last one is the business category, that they want to have a startup in the form of a service provider, and they want some assurance that when they invest in that tool called drones to do some inspection or some mining or some construction, whatever it is that they're doing with those drones, that they're not gonna end up bankrupting. So if we address the three categories, the first category, the legacy category, is unfortunately, believe it or not, the most difficult to deal with today. Because that category has the professional mapper, and that professional mapper is used to fly an aircraft over the city of San Francisco and its suburbs and wrap this up in one day. So when you tell them that you're flying a drone over the convention center of Denver and that's your job today, they tell you, okay, you know what, that doesn't cut it for me and I'm not interested. But then in the meantime, when they go out and fly the city of San Francisco, they have gaps in their data. See, they go back and say, okay, I made a mistake. I need your drone to fill up that little gap. And then you show them how the process flow is happening. They say, okay, well, you know what? I'm not interested anymore. I'm used to the professional grade cameras. They have tiny distortion in the lenses. They have this, this, and that. So I don't need your drone. But then they go back and they want to deliver their mapping product to their client. The client rejects the data because it has gaps. So they go back to you and say, okay, can we please get your damn drone so that we can get that gap filled? And then they put up with a little more erroneous data that comes out of the drone. Because let's compare here, a professional grade camera, if you look around the GEO week here, professional grade camera for manned aerial surveys costs like $3 million.
Yeah.
The drone one costs like $1,000. So you're talking about three orders of magnitude difference in price, and you shouldn't expect that they would act the same.
Right.
It doesn't make sense if they acted the same. So they act very differently. It's all about the engineers behind the recipe to make those little cameras on board the drones to actually make them to provide good quality stuff. And again, that kind of, I'm reiterating my former statement that the vendor is responsible for producing good quality stuff. It's not the user that we should be blaming. So back to the category of professional mapper, they are the most difficult to work with. Unless they benefit a lot from the drones. And we've identified, and so many other people identified, which category that benefits a lot from the drones. And it turned out that it's not the professional mapper with a manned aircraft. It turned out to be the land surveying professional that used total stations and GPS receivers to measure single points on the ground and spend the day to collect 10 points and then go home. When they use drones today, they spend less cost, and they spend less time, and they end up with more data at the same level of accuracy. Hence, the land surveying industry is actually the largest consumers in the field of drones today. We used to come to the conferences addressing airborne surveys, airborne mapping, and we used to talk about the manned aircrafts and the unmanned aircraft, or crewed and uncrewed, and we noticed that they're not much interest in uncrewed because people are not interested in 100 meter or 300 feet business. They're interested in covering the city of such and such, or even the state of Nevada, and so on and so forth. Which led us to think that maybe we could address the clientele in the surveying, land surveying business. So we ended up starting with the FIG conference, which is the International Federation of Surveyors. And the FIG is an abbreviation in French. And we found so much interest in there. And I ended up actually putting together a new committee addressing the standards for flying drones and surveying by drones for the surveying community. And that committee that I put together has academics, has people from the private sector and from the public sector. So I tried to diversify the committee so that we end up with the right standards, something truthful, so that the community actually learns something from that. Otherwise, it would be a waste of time. So the academics will participate with the theoretical background. The private sector people are gonna show their capabilities of their systems and limitations, of course. And the public sector is going to kick in with their specifications and interest in what they should see in the data, what they should receive in the information and the mapping products. And that's what we're working on now with the FIG as a standards for surveying by drones. And the community in that FIG, we had a conference last year in Orlando, Florida. And I had a couple of sessions running there talking about the standards. One of the sessions, I asked members of the society to participate as panelists, where we have the opportunity for people to ask questions and we answer them. So I had a very prominent professor out of Purdue, Professor Habib. They call him the father of LiDAR and photogrammetry. And he gave an outstanding lecture on the theory of using drones for photogrammetry and for LiDAR. And then I had invited the CEO of YellowScan out of Toulouse, France. His name is Tristan Alois. And Tristan is actually a PhD in aerospace engineering and geomatics engineering. So he was the chief scientist, but then he grew to the CEO position. So he gave a lecture which is technically oriented, but in the meantime, kind of explained the business of how he grew the company and so on. And then Mylene Troy out of Regal, out of Florida. She's the US program manager in Regal. And she gave a lecture about Regal and so on. So it was a session full of information shared by the academia, the private sector and so on. And then the audience participated with questions. The very first question, when I'm gonna have a drone that helps me to stop using the land surveying equipment and go home with a lot more information for the same price? And that was the repeated question that we consistently heard, which means that that society is actually gonna benefit from what we're doing. And that's category number one. Sorry for the long story, but you asked for stories.
I love stories.
She said I'm full of stories. So
I love it.
The second category is the user who is actually on the business front. They are investors that they see the best way is to go for a new high tech, and what's better than drones. So that is the investor of today that has the knowledge of some bad history with investing in a drone industry. They know that many companies failed. In a commercial UAV expo 2015, in the fall of 2015, a gentleman went up on the stage and said, I just landed $40 million worth of investment fund, venture capitalists out of Southern California. And magically, he lost all that in 3 years. So 2018, I saw him in a conference in 2018. And he actually approached me after his presentation and said, I like your presentation, it's full of stuff. I said, okay, thank you. I will take that as a compliment. He basically wanted to say it's geeky. That's why I liked it, but I said, okay, cool. And we exchanged business cards. 3 years later, I ran into him in a conference, at the same conference actually, and he said that they bankrupted. They spent all the money and they don't have a product that sells. And it was basically a wrong game plan, wrong approach, wrong technology, wrong hires, and they wasted $40 million. So that's actually happened across the world. I've heard stories over in Germany, France, Dubai, Singapore, many stories happening. People started to do those startups and they went out of luck. And so the history is there, and then next generation investors are not gonna approach that easily. They're gonna be very, very careful. Unless there is a proof that there is a vendor out there that people can trust. They could buy their tools and go do their job. For example, a newcomer to the United States, when they try to find a way to make a living and put food on a table, and they hear of the word Uber and Lyft, they could actually go and do an Uber and Lyft because you don't need to talk to your driver. And all they need is a GPS to take them from point A to point B. So they could actually have a decent living and stay away from being in other wrong businesses.
Right.
And they could have a decent living without hurting the community. So I think that's one of the contributions that Uber and Lyft did, is to give people jobs as well. So that's what I think is gonna happen with that category of user, which is the business investor that wants to have a new establishment, a company of their own that does some drone surveys as a service provider and depend on a vendor that provides them with the right tool set that work all the time, repeatedly and consistently, and produce the right quality mapping products that they could turn around and serve their clients. The technical category, the last third category, that wants to fly the drone and use the stuff, they will follow along the business category if the vendor is there. So it sounds like my entire story here boils down to a good vendor that could actually craft the right solution at the right time for the right user.
And tell the right story. I love that. Mohammed, you have been very generous with your time. Your insights and stories are amazing. We could go on for days and days. We will not. I want to respect your time. This has been very fantastic. Thank you so much. Just really, really a lot of fun. So we're just going to wrap it here at GeoWeek. This has been an amazing day, and we will catch you next time.